across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It's Thursday, December 14th, and it's another beautiful day to have you here up north from wherever you're listening across the Civic Media Radio Network. Whether you're joining us on the local radio or through the app, by podcast, or social media, thanks for being here. It's our last live show for the year. I will join you again live at 6 a.m. when the calendar says 2024, but we have some great revisits with some of the best guests of 2023 to tell you about as well. But also, I've got another question for you. Did you know this is our 250th morning show? And I think the powers that be must have known that. I'm sure it was in all the memos around Civic Media, because for show 250, they brought me in the guy who was here for show number one. Luke Mathers joins us as well. Mr. Mathers, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Kreitlow. Do I get a game ball for this instance?
I thought I was all set to give it to you, and then suddenly I heard the door latch on the Pacers locker room.
Oh,
and
no!
It's gone. Greg Bach is off today.
He is.
So he's getting some well-deserved puppy time with Maybell and taking care of business, so we'll see him after the holidays here. But more importantly to me, is that I'm used to seeing Mr. Mathers at the world headquarters of Civic Media, but yet here he is in Greg's chair at the Shaw, at the WAUK studios in downtown Waukesha. Is it fair to say that you would walk or drive 500 miles just to produce this 250th radio show? Would you do that for us? He would. After setting numerous alarms.
I didn't even need the alarms. If he wakes up
after watching a Bucks game.
I didn't even need the alarms. I stayed up late watching Kelsey looked at me several times throughout the game and was like, this game's going really long. And I was like, yes, it is. And she's like, didn't you want to go to bed early today? And I was like, yes, I did.
Yes,
but
you did.
It was a career night by Giannis Antetokounmpo, and mm-hmm. I was drawn in. And at that point, I was like, I think he had roughly, I want to say 38 points after the third quarter. And that was about 9:15, 9:30-ish when I was like, I'm going to be in bed by then. And yep. The game was still really close. And I wanted to keep watching, and it just kept going on and on and on. It was a very, very long game, but I did wake up, and I drove, not 500 miles, but here in the Shaw, I've got a bucket list myself, Pat, to check off all of the different things here at Civic Media that I can say that I've rightfully done, and now producing your morning show out of the Shaw is one of those things I can mark off the list.
Well, wait, does it work that way? Like, you're not just going to all the Civic Media stations, but you're producing different shows from there. So the next time you produce me, will you be sitting in Green Bay or, you know, maybe Hayward or something like that?
You'll have to tune in and find out.
I guess it's all part of the mystery. Since we've already mentioned Giannis, why don't we go ahead and give the details here that in scoring 64 points, he not only broke Michael Redd's single game scoring record, he also broke Kareem Abdul-Jabbar's all-time franchise scoring record, crossing 17,000 career points, becoming just the 100th NBA player to do so. And in the end, oh, by the way, they played the actual game and the Bucks won 140 to 126. But that reminds me, super fan over here, the ongoing debate about the trade, you know, that brought Dame Lillard here and basically blew up our defense. So again, scored 140, gave up 126. And that's how they lost in the in-season tournament to these same Pacers.
Well, it's so important to point out the Pacers, one of the top scoring offenses in the league, though. So holding the Pacers to 126, Pat, may not seem like a good defensive effort, but it was a pretty good showing. The fact that the Pacers only had, I want to say, they were sitting below 100 points still well into the fourth quarter. And the fact that they got to 126 was because their bench, when they pulled all their starters, were scoring pretty well. And then Giannis actually had to come back into the game to close out the game, because it became with, I want to say, about two and a half minutes left, a almost single digit lead only. So the Bucks. The Bucks had to put it away.
Apologize to our listeners. We've never gone this in depth about an in-game report, and I promise we'll never do it again about a regular season game. We'll do it for the 5 months that the playoffs run later on this spring. I'll give one more little factoid though. Giannis becomes the second player in league history to make at least 20 field goals and 20 free throws without a three-pointer. The only other one who did that, Wilt Chamberlain, in his 100-point game back in 1962. And I'm only bringing up that little factoid because I know you and I have discussed previously, I'm one of those few people, I would get rid of the three-point line if I could. I think it's unique, it's interesting, it gets people talking, but...
I want a four-point line. I want those half-court shots to count as four points.
I want them to be a peach basket again. I want that.
Can I share one little more fun factoid, though?
Sure.
It was a record-setting night, not just with Giannis last night. Damian Lillard became the fifth all-time. He passed Kyle Korver, who for a season was also a Buck, but he passed Korver on the all-time three-point made list. So now Dame Lillard, fifth in NBA history for all-time made three-pointers.
Until they blow up the line, then we'll never have that record again. But that is not happening. Here's what's coming up on the program otherwise. Today, we're going to talk about budget surpluses and moral deficits, because even as Wisconsin maintains a record budget surplus, its university system is reduced to begging legislators not to cut funds as Republicans continue their culture war assault on campuses. Meanwhile, in Washington, the House GOP votes to proceed with an impeachment inquiry against President Biden as a smokescreen to shield Donald Trump by pretending both men are legally flawed. We'll talk to Joe Zepecki coming up in a bit here. And then the holiday season. It brings peace on earth sometimes, but war at home. It brings tranquility to many homes, many families, but definitely not to all of them. Domestic violence often surges at this time of year. In Hometown Health, we'll talk to a leader who advocates for domestic abuse victims about warning signs and about resources. We will talk to Nancy Stensel from Marathon County about her ongoing efforts to protect clean water. We'll talk not only about the PFAS in the water supply around the Wausau area, but her ongoing work to try to oppose the potential for sulfide mining that could harm the water supply in the area. And we're slated to visit as well with Wisconsin Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski, who called this week for the resignation of a member of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. For obvious reasons, he's a fake elector, and he had to file paperwork legally rescinding his claims, and he's not worthy of the office, and he should step down, or the Senate Republican leader should remove him. But of course, the Senate Republican leader did not remove him and is standing by him. So we'll visit with Sarah Godlewski about that later in the program. We'll get the weatherology forecast heading into the weekend from meteorologist Jennifer Wuchitsky, oh, yeah, and then that Luke Mathers guy shows up along the way as well. If you'd like to take part in the program, 844-967-2789. Again, 844-967-2789. You can text us. You can call us either way at that phone number, or you can use the Civic Media app, which you ought to have on your phone by now to listen to live programs and maybe listen to things on some of the other radio stations across the network. Temperatures at 6 a.m. around Civic Media Land to go like this. It's 28 up here on Lake Wissota, 22 in Hayward, 27 in Park Falls, Wausau checking in at 25, Green Bay at 30, La Crosse 29 degrees right now, Wisconsin Rapids 27, Oshkosh is at 31, Madison 34, and Waukesha is at 32 degrees right now. As I was preparing the nightly old fashions that Dr. Kreitlow and I like to enjoy, we pulled out some of the holiday glassware, and we were remarking on the change in, shall we say, retail generosity. For example, I'm holding up here a glass. These holiday etched glasses are what you got at Arby's like 25, 30 years ago. You know, and they're very lovely. They're good quality. You can put a nice drink in there. You know, the original Happy Meal toys were like actual stuffed animals, and now they're so small they're like choking hazards. You know, you don't get the things that you used to get once upon a time, but we still have drinkware from, you know, fast food restaurants. It's not just Arby's. It was other stores and things that used to give that out. And I'm not aware. That's why I turned to young whippersnapper Luke Mathers to see if anybody, are there any premiums like that during the holiday season anymore that you can think of that not you just that, get?
No, I don't. That's kind of a, it's a gone art, I think. I think there's a McDonald's.
The nice lost, glasses, the lost like, art yeah, of lost generosity. Art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The McDonald's glasses, there's like some fancy glass ones from, I don't know, the 90s maybe that I think my parents still have at their house. But I don't believe there's anything like that today being given away.
Do you know what a turning point it was in my life at some point to walk into an antique store? I want to say it was in Stillwater, Minnesota. And you see the things that you drank out of as a kid. They were like Burger King glasses or things like that. And you're just like, it's in an antique store,
I feel old.
My Roy Kent coffee mug that I'm holding up here now with Roy Kent saying oi on it is one of these days that's going to be in an antique store. It was either, you know, that for my final live show of the new year, but I decided to go with the grandpa one because it's my new one. One of my daughters sent me a coffee mug with grandkids 3 and 4 on here and me reading them stories and me watching pulling the little red wagon and me watching Blue's Clues or something with them. And gosh darn, they grow up so fast because grandkids 1 and 2 are 9 and 17 and they were roughhousing the other day. And the 17-year-old now has a broken nose to show for it for the roughhousing.
Ooh.
Again, the difference between raising girls versus raising boys is sometimes really obvious. But I sent a note back to him saying, look, when we get together for our family trip together coming up, nobody's going to mess with us. They're going to look at you with that bandage on your nose and go, okay, he just got out of one bar fight for being 17, and he's willing to defend this family. So
yeah.
I'm proud. Wear that bandage with pride, young man. You don't have to tell them it was the 9-year-old with an elbow.
I was going to say, the 9-year-old sounds like they did all right defending themselves. But
the 9-year-old's going to be like, yeah, you should have seen the other guy, right? Let's pause here. When we come back, we'll unpack the news some more. Not great news out of the blackmail attempt that was successful against the University of Wisconsin Board of Regents. Wherever you're listening across Wisconsin on this Thursday morning, when you're here, you're up north live from Lake Wissota across the Civic Media Radio Network. Back in a bit. One Muppet song before we head into the holidays. All right, let's unpack the news. You can always join us with comments and questions along the way at 844-967-2789. You can call that number or text it. We'd be happy to visit with you on this Thursday morning. All right, well, we telegraphed it yesterday, and it did come to fruition last evening that in an about-face, the University of Wisconsin Board of Regents approved an agreement. Some would say agreement, some would say blackmail, Wednesday evening from Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, that will lead to a limiting of diversity positions on the system's campuses in exchange for money that's already been approved for faculty raises. Now, again, I don't want to belabor the point. If you're a regular listener, you already know the legislature approved these pay raises. The legislature did. The governor signed it because that's what happens when a bill becomes a law. It goes from the legislative to the executive branch. Then the executive branch executes that law by releasing the raises. Somehow the legislature found a maneuver through a rules committee that lets them hold on to the raises that they've already approved of. And by the way, if it strikes you as that there's a unique parallel here, yes, it's the debt ceiling fight in Congress all over again. The debt ceiling debate is not a real debate. Again, Congress votes for a budget. It votes to approve spending the money. The debt ceiling, raising the debt ceiling, is their way of then paying the bills for the spending that they've already approved of. It's essentially using the credit card and then saying, I don't feel like paying the credit card bill. the Republicans in the state capitol are engaged in the same fiscal recklessness. They have approved spending this money, but now they've decided they're not going to spend the money. Governor Evers is sued, and eventually a court is going to tell the legislature that you need to release those raises. But members of the Board of Regents decided that they couldn't wait. They risked looking like the Grinch rather than staying on offense and pointing out who is the Grinch on this. And in fact, Robin Voss put up a tweet last night saying something like, this is only a start in their efforts to attack diversity and inclusion programs. And Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation area captured the essence of that tweet perfectly by posting this headline: Area Mouse given cookie now seeks milk. And that's essentially what you've got. You have empowered legislative Republicans to engage in more hostage taking. It's something that Governor Evers recognized right away in his statement criticizing this attack on the independence and the autonomy of the Board of Regents. You know, never, the governor writes, has it been more important in history for higher education institutions to have the opportunity to make the very best decisions for students, faculty, staff, and campuses without the fear of political intimidation, threats, or retribution. Evers says, this vote represents a vast overreach by a group of Republicans who've grown exceedingly comfortable overextending, manipulating, and abusing their power to control, subvert, and obstruct basic functions of government. And he's correct. And he says a lot more about that. But he is calling out the fact that the canary in the coal mine has dropped dead yet again from the poisonous air of politicizing our higher education institutions. That's exactly what's happened here. And if anybody thinks that the Republicans have been placated, you are absolutely fooling yourself. It's really just a question of what will they do next and when will they do it, because it most certainly will happen. State Representative Francesca Hung rightly criticized Jay Rothman, the UW system president. She posts that Rothman said, quote, "We have divided government. If we want to move forward, if we want to make progress, we need to make compromises." And Representative Hong calls that a shameful comment after he negotiated DEI, compromised student voices, and set a dangerous precedent for the future extortion of our public institutions. And it's understandable the frustration that many people feel, that there are only so many ways that you can react within the confines of a democracy. For example, on a much larger level, when Mitch McConnell and Senate Republicans blocked President Obama from filling a Supreme Court vacancy, they never paid a price for that. Obama did nothing to seek any meaningful consequences from that maneuver. We have a system that, you know, if people cheat, if they rig the system, if they rig the maps, it is monumentally difficult and takes more than a decade to unrig what has been cheated. And yet, it's the only system that we have. And the only way around it is to continue to encourage people to vote, to continue taking cases up like the challenge to the gerrymandered maps in the hopes of having, you know, a brighter day at some point. But between the Board of Regents feeling like they needed to take this agreement, and now we hear President Biden is willing to take on, you know, much different immigration policies in exchange for more aid for Ukraine, you can see why people really are down on politics right now. They basically see the guys with the black hats being able to do whatever they want and not have to abide by the confines of norms and standards, to which all I can say is I understand the feeling, but that walking away is just simply not an option. You have to hold people accountable. Sometimes you hold them accountable through, you know, shall we say, just, you know, basic oratory. Other times you have to engage in mockery. And I do like to engage in mockery here because we're now going to talk about the decision by House Republicans to push forward with an impeachment inquiry against President Biden. For what? Again, I know, for what? We're going to talk to Joe Zepecki about this as well. Luke, I'd sent you a note, and I can't remember if I followed up on it, whether you have a little snippet of audio ready about the impeachment. And I don't even have the congressman's name here in front of me, but just listen to this quick little four-second clip of explaining why they have to go forward with impeachment against President Biden, even though they don't have any evidence yet.
You cannot just not say you're innocent and not have to prove it.
You cannot just have to say you're innocent and not have to prove it. No. That's actually the foundation of democracy here, is innocent until proven guilty. And yet that's what the Republicans are saying now, is we have to have an impeachment inquiry and maybe even an impeachment trial on something in the hopes of finding something else, which is awfully rich coming from certain members of Congress who ignored congressional subpoenas by the January 6th committee, and yet now are, you know, threatening punishment against Hunter Biden and others as they put out their own subpoenas. You're thinking, okay, well, that's just the craziness of Washington. I'm sure Wisconsin's six Republicans in the House Republican delegation, they were above all of this, right? No, of course not. You know better. All six Wisconsin Republicans, however they feel about the lack of evidence and about the political theater involved, all voted yes to move ahead with the impeachment inquiry. More with Joe Zepecki after this. You're up north.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Here it is one last time before we take a pause on the live shows. Joe Zepecki joining us to talk about the week's events. And gosh, again, in Wisconsin, it's never a slow news week. How are you, Joe?
I'm okay. What a week it is. I find myself really squeezed because I'm ready for 2023 to be over, but I'm not so sure I'm that eager for 2024 to start. I'm really a man out of time at the moment.
Yeah. I understand because, and I feel like we've all kind of felt this since the pandemic. Remember when it was like 2021 was just another 2020, you know, time meant nothing. And it's like, we used to really look forward to the new year. It's like, oh no, what fresh hell is this going to bring? But
I think we've got we have an ornament on the tree that says 2021. Still not great, but better.
Nope. That sounds about right. Exactly. So this year appears to be ending on a note of the Board of Regents for one shining moment, not being a rubber stamp for, you know, whoever is UW system president. It doesn't matter that it was today or before. The Board of Regents has never been known as, you know, a place where you find mavericks. And yet it behaved mavericky at least once this past Saturday. What do we make of it that the board in the end knuckled under to Republican pressure to attack their own diversity programs in order to, you know, get released the hostages that Robin Voss had been holding?
I think the takeaway here is that the trend towards politicization of everything continues, and that is bad for public policy outcomes. We should be insulating as many institutions as we can from the vagaries of our politics, from who's up and who's down and how cranky the conservative base is or how loud the liberal base is. This should work in both ways, right? The reason for checks and balances and systems is to try to smooth things out. And here you have, across the board, on what should be so easy to do, such common sense things when it comes to raises that have already been approved. You just got to release the money. An engineering building that the entire business community in the state of Wisconsin wants. And the insane notion that in our institutions of higher learning, there should be some care taken to ensure that there is a diverse student body, that people feel welcome on college campuses as they are in a formative period of their life. These are not radical ideas. You want to get young people at a formative time in their life engaging with people who don't just look like them, who aren't just from where they're from, who don't just think where they're from. That is the very idea behind higher education. And to see that politicized the way that Republicans have done, it's just really, really discouraging as we head into another election year, that even that Republicans, more so than anybody else on the political stage these days, think that government power is the answer to everything, that universities shouldn't get to make their own decisions, that businesses shouldn't get to make their own decisions, that they, the politicians, know best. And I really think that this is going to lead to a sea change in our politics and sort of across the body politic, in people realizing sometimes there's too much politics. Government can't be the answer to everything. And this Republican approach to, if we politicize everything and what we say goes because we won the last election or have a little bit of power, I think people are really, really going to sour on that. And it's going to lead to additional political problems for the grand old party.
Let's turn to election integrity, and I'm going to combine two things together and ask what it says. What can we glean from the fact that Senate Republican leader Devin LeMahieu is allowing Bob Spindell, an adjudicated fake elector, to stay on the State Elections Commission, while on the other hand, Josh Call is saying he has so much faith in Wisconsin elections that if Trump wins Wisconsin next year, he will defend him, because he has a level of faith that, you know, Devin LeMahieu does not have. You understand that. I understand that. I'm just not sure that that's getting properly, that cynicism or whatever it is getting properly conveyed to the average Wisconsin voter.
No, and I don't know Leader LeMahieu, and I'm really trying to be much more careful in my old age here in rushing to judgment about people. But it is pretty hard to identify a rationale for this position, that if someone, Bob Spindell in this case, has by his own admission participated in an attempt to overturn the results of an election and is not eligible by his own admission to serve as an elector in 2024, which is one of many roles that we the people get to play in our elections, if he is not eligible for that due to choices he made and things he did, how in the name of all that is holy is he qualified and credible to design the system by which people will participate in our elections next year? It does not make sense to me. And I'm not going to say this declaratively, but it is things like this that we're going to lead people to say about Devin LeMahieu, maybe this isn't a serious person. Maybe despite some of the things that he has done to work in a bipartisan fashion, maybe this is what the takeaway should be, and time is just going to have to tell. But what we do know is that Josh Call is a serious person. There is maybe no one in the state of Wisconsin who has been more staid and respectful of the rule of law and the process in all of this. The easiest thing politically for him to do would have been to run out and say, we're going after these fake electors. And he didn't do that. He hasn't done that. He's not saying this now, even as there are reports, media reports, saying there's an ongoing criminal investigation that some Republicans are cooperating with. Josh Call refuses to come out and say so because he respects the norm that says you don't tell the world you're investigating someone unless you are bringing charges, because he understands the role that he plays as a prosecutor, that prosecutors play. And in the head-to-head there, Josh Call looks like the serious person as opposed to the Republican who we shall not name again.
Well, look, Devin LeMahieu, whom I'll name again, is not a serious person, and he has proven it in that vein. But look at who he had for an example. His predecessor was Scott Fitzgerald, who is now a congressman, who not only said, yes, by all means, let's vote for, you know, continuing the impeachment inquiry on President Biden. He says,
despite no evidence,
I'm ready to vote for impeachment right now. He says he's willing to vote for impeaching the president of the United States right now with no evidence. It is the very definition of fire, ready, aim. He is not a serious person, but he knows he doesn't have to be. He's in an extremely safe seat.
Yeah. So my take on this, and I hear you, and Fitz has lost the respect that I had for him with this, and there wasn't a lot left. But listen, for 7 years, Republicans have been looking for a link between Hunter Biden's business dealings and Joe Biden, and they haven't found it. 7 years, nothing. They don't have the goods. They want to hear from Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden says, okay, let's do it in an open hearing for all the world to see. And they go, no, we were just kidding. The Republicans don't have the goods. Now, very cynically, I think part of what Fitzgerald is doing here is he is playing a role in their conference that says, you know, to the few folks wavering on even opening the impeachment inquiry, you know, your Ken Bucks, your other Republicans who have said, well, we don't have it, that if Fitzgerald and others are out there saying, well, forget the inquiry, we can go right to impeaching the guy outright, that they can use an impeachment inquiry vote as a means to string this out and say, hey, if we don't do this inquiry, we're going to have people charging ahead going right to the impeachment. So I do think there's a little bit of conference politics going on there. That's a very inside baseball, but it's the only even somewhat rational explanation I can come up with.
Well, or this, the only other charitable thing I can say is to come back to Whitewater and Bill Clinton. That investigation was not opened over an affair with Monica Lewinsky. It was opened over a real estate deal in Arkansas. But while Ken Starr was looking into that, he stumbled, he quite literally was given information about something entirely separate. And that's all I can figure is to be charitable is that they're hoping to stumble upon something else while they're doing this. But I mean, that's not what this really is. This is really about being able to both sides it, you know, oh, Trump this. Well, yeah, but Biden that.
Right. And they've got people in their own conference who are Republicans who are pounding the table and saying, I've got nothing to run on. I can't go back and tell Republicans that I did anything in this Congress other than depose Speaker McCarthy. And so, you know, they're freaking out a little bit.
There's a new poll out that says we may as well have Tammy Baldwin start packing up the boxes here because the Republican candidate for Senate has already been determined. And according to this polling, it's not Eric Hovde or the other businessman.
No, this is a new
PPP,
public policy polling released yesterday, Wednesday, December 13th, looking at who Republicans in Wisconsin want to be on the top of their ticket next year. And the resounding answer is Sheriff David Clark for Senate and Donald Trump for president. So this poll finds Clark at 52, Eric Hovde at 7%, Scott Mayer at 6%. And just for the fun of it, Trump has a 38-point lead in Wisconsin over his closest competitor in the Republican primary. So listen, this gets to the heart of a thing we've talked about and I've talked about all over the place is the Republicans are a party that is divided. They do not have a true North Star because they've got, yes, they've got the MAGA wing. They've also got people who want to move on from Trump. They've got people who want to blow up the system. They've got people who are, you know, serious about things like Ukraine and our national security. And divided parties don't typically fare well in elections. And boy, do Republicans have a lot of work to do in 2024 to get everybody on the same page and be anything close to a unified party.
I mean, this is really just a name recognition poll at this point. I mean, because an Eric Hovde would have to spend a lot of money to get introduced anyway. I mean, Tim Michaels would have gotten the same kind of number against somebody who actually served as a sheriff in Milwaukee County. It's just name ID.
It's just name ID, but with David Clark, it ain't just name ID. Mm-hmm. That guy is loco, and people know it, and yet Wisconsin Republicans still go, oh, yeah, I want to go with him, right? Chris Christie's got pretty good name recognition, but Republicans don't like him because he has the temerity to criticize Donald Trump. And so they see the kind of crazy David Clark is, and they go, Yeah. That's what we need in Washington.
So we're heading into the holiday break here, which means Christmas Day. And Christmas Day means a lot of things to a lot of people, not the least of which the Milwaukee Bucks playing basketball on Christmas Day, because, you know, they're one of the big time teams now. But I didn't look it up, but I don't think the Bucks do especially well either on the Christmas Day games or just when they have this much national TV attention. What do you think the nation thinks of the Milwaukee Bucks? No, we haven't seen Christmas Day yet, but however it comes down, what do they make of the Bucks? Are they just one of those teams that they put up with until, you know, the Lakers and the Celtics are ready to play in the playoffs?
No, I think there's a lot of excitement around Milwaukee. I think nationally the perspective and the thought is, man, they paired Giannis with Dame Lillard, look out world. Now, what I would say is this ain't that team you got to be afraid of yet. And we've talked about it a few times. I don't want to belabor the point because it's the holiday season. This Milwaukee team needs to figure it out on defense. They got to figure out how to stop people, because you're not going to win playoff series scoring 130 points but giving up 128. That's just not how the playoffs work in the NBA. And I think right now the national perception of this team is a little bit rosier than the lived reality of those of us who have been watching them struggle to prevent teams from scoring.
There you go. Santa is a regular listener. Put defense in that stocking, please, in the locker room. Joe Specky, happy holidays. We'll see you in the new year. Oh, you know what? No, I take that back. We're going to talk next week, you and your lovely bride, aren't we?
Oh, if my better half tells me to be somewhere, I'm there.
Oh, okay. Well,
So let's do it. I just follow her lead.
It's a date. We'll do that. Thanks, Joe. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
All right, coming up next, today's history lesson and musical memories right after this. You're up north. Well, if we're going to play Marvin Gaye, I suppose we better bring in Dr. Lyerly here. Look at how Luke's Woo! Face just lights up. Like, all right, now it's a morning, and she's got her Santa hat out. Good morning.
I'm too busy dancing over here, Pat.
I see that. Mm-hmm. How are you?
I'm good. Merry Christmas. Let's go.
Merry Christmas. Look at you. You're going to be our little elf for today. There's a new winner for best hat on the show. Not the Luke wearing the Bucks hat with the aircraft carrier size brim on it. So he's so shy today.
What a callback. What a callback for everybody out there in the listening audience. You know, Pat just ripping on my hat, you know. Let me just revel in the Giannis having a record night last night and me celebrating with my Bucks hat on.
I'm not saying that everybody here has listened to all 250 shows, by the way. Happy 250th to us. But there's one or two that go, I wonder if Luke still has that hat with the great big brim on it. And now they know you do.
That was the first thing I thought when I saw the Bucks hat. I was like, ooh, that's a sharp hat, and I could land a plane on it.
So anyway, getting back to Marvin Gaye, he had the number one song this day in 1968. Actually, Motown held the first three spots on the chart at this point. The number two song this week in 1968 was Love Child by the Supremes, and number three was Stevie Wonder's For Once in My Life. Let's give a little listen. This is actual audio from the Ed Sullivan Show this day in 1969 when the Jackson 5 made their TV debut.
There's a lot going on during that show.
There was a lot going on, yeah. Sometimes Ed Sullivan would have two bands play at once. It was just, it was before they only had three channels. And so sometimes they'd put two shows on at the same time. That's how that would work. It's early. Luke was up really late watching this. But the Bucks game ran about 5 hours.
With a new system. I'm sorry.
This is really impressive, though. I mean, Luke drove all the way from Madison to Waukesha to board the show.
To be fair, I want to throw the disclaimer out there. I didn't want to lean on it, but I've never produced out of this studio before, so I am on kind of training wheels.
You can't really tell at all. I mean, it's just going. You're doing great. Doing great.
It just kind of warms my heart that we're all here together. It feels like the olden days.
Like Kristen's trying to make us all feel good. I'm about to make jokes about, you know, Luke operating the border with his toes just to show off. You know, go back to using the fingers, buddy. Can we get? Let's go to another birthday first, because I'd like to have a little musical bed in the background for all of this. You may not know the name Joyce Wilson. She's 77 years old today, but all of us of a certain age saw her behind Tony Orlando for all those years because she was one half of Dawn. Sometimes Ed Sullivan would only play it.
I thought you were going to go with Tie a Yellow Ribbon. That was my favorite.
No, because it was Dawn, so I wanted to hear the ladies back there, you know, of Dawn who were singing. All right, This is the anniversary of the end of the Toledo War in the United States. On this day, a boundary dispute that, you know, came to violence now and then, came to an end on this day in 1836 between Michigan and Ohio. But it has ramifications to Wisconsin. In return for Michigan giving up its claim to a strip of land along its southern border, you ever notice the Michigan southern boundary is, it feels kind of like a little off compared to the Illinois border or something like that. Anyway, to give that up to Ohio, Michigan was awarded the UP. The UP was going to be part of Wisconsin, but by Michigan giving up that strip of land at the bottom, Michigan was given the Upper Peninsula. And to this day, we're still trying to decide if we should be offended by this deal or relieved that the UP went to another state.
But, you know, let me just give the official report from Green Bay. The UP is part of Wisconsin. They can call it whatever they want, but it's ours.
Oh, we know. I mean, it is. Do you feel... Luke, like maybe Dr. Lyerly still is playing the show in the background. Were you listening on another window there, Kristen? Look at that chagrin.
Maybe it's not all me. I'm over here thinking, you know, Greg needs a raise for being able to juggle all these tabs at once. And I don't know if vindicated. It was just me.
Wait.
I don't want to throw anybody.
Now I think Greg needs a raise. Let's go back to Greg needs a raise.
Oh, yeah. You shouldn't have said that. I don't know if you know this. Greg thinks you're extremely handsome.
I know. He tells me every time I see him. I know.
Very funny. Also funny.
You know, this is the anniversary on this day in 1977, the big Christmas movie out that year, Saturday Night Fever, opened in theaters. We could have done a disco theme all morning with Staying Alive, Disco Inferno, More Than a Woman, Night Fever, Jive Talkin', You Should Be Dancing. But yeah, the movie opened on this day in 1977.
Have you seen the commercials with John Travolta playing Santa Claus?
Love it. And I love that for all the whining I do about getting older, and I saw a doctor yesterday about my shoulder, but that's another story. I love that he's willing to embrace it and go, yeah, I'm older. Yeah, I'm fluffier. I can dress, you know, I'm not in a white disco suit anymore. I wear a Santa suit, and I'm confident in that. And good on him for doing that.
He looks pretty good out on the dance floor as Santa.
Oh, yeah. Yes, still definitely has the moves. On this day in 1991, Michael Jackson released his 8th album, Dangerous. It hit number 1 on the album chart, stayed there for 4 weeks. Singles included Black or White and Remember the Time. All right,
this was the Lisa Marie era.
Yes, very much so. Mm-hmm. All right, let's set a new tone here. It was on this day in 2015 that Adele was at number 1 with her album 25 featuring this song. Feels like that Saturday Night Live skit now, where everybody just stops
Hello.
What they're doing.
It's me.
There's nothing else that matters right now. Peace, tranquility. These years you'd like to me to go over. Yeah, I'm just depressed now. We can get rid of that. Hometown Health is Hometown Health's coming up at the bottom of the hour. Unfortunately, a serious subject that there isn't peace and tranquility everywhere during the holiday season, Kristen.
Yeah, we're going to talk about domestic abuse and violence, which tends to escalate during the holidays just because of the disruption, you know, stress and travel and all of the emotions. So we're going to talk with an expert who is based in Door County, but does a lot of work statewide about domestic violence, what you can do if you are experiencing domestic violence, how you can be safe, and how you can help.
Also, Nancy Stensel is going to visit with us right at the top of the next hour about keeping the water safe and clean all throughout the Marathon County area. And we're slated to visit with Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski around 7:20 and her call for a member of the Wisconsin Elections Commission to step down for being a fake elector. That's followed by Hometown Health as we wrap things up here on Up North News Radio for a Thursday morning live from Lake Wissota all across the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be back in just a bit.